Hello again, Paul, my friend. Come into the office. Take a seat. How are you feeling? What's on your mind? What's going on?
Well, thanks for having me in, Dr. Herpetologist. I'm just worried about, you know, I'm a pretty wound tight guy. I like to, you know, basically on top of everything and just in charge. And, you know, I'm really worried about losing control of things and, you know, control's a really big thing for me. I just like to, you know, have everything lined up the way I like it. And, you know, it's a fear of mine to just, you know, not be able to manage, you know, everything that's going on. Yeah.
So control freak, rearing its head this week. Ah, that's very interesting. So, you know, you like everything nice and steady. You don't like surprises.
No, I don't like, you know, just not being in charge of stuff, you know? It's a trouble.
Excuse me, Dr. Herfenschnaufer, is it time for my session yet?
Just a minute, Mr. Matthews. Just a minute. I might be a little bit longer. I have a very important case today.
I just told you to wait outside.
I'm rather impatient, and I think it could be my turn now. So, Paul, if you could just move along, I'd like this to be my session now.
But we just have to get somewhere.
Where we so poor? Where we really?
And welcome to DC OCD, the DC Events podcast, where we are looking at every single DC event from Crisis on Infinite Earths upward in order. And I'm not doing this one alone. I'm joined by an intruder, a disruptor, a man who is hard to control. And this is Shag Matthews, the irredeemable Shag, as he is known. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate this. You know, it's kind of almost serendipity I'm being here, just because I don't know if you've heard, but I'm starting my own new podcast. It's called DC CDO, which is OCD in the proper alphabetical order, by the way, where we're going to be doing reviews of your reviews of DC events. So it's going to be fun. We've got the first episode already lined up. We're going to talk about how Crisis should have been at 100% and Legends should have been at like 92 or 93%. So I think we're going to have a good time, and it'll be fun.
Okay. Well,
In fact, the topic of episode 3 is how you guys are going to have to adjust your scores as you get further along when you get to the gems, the hidden gems of things like Amazon's Attack and Joker Last Laugh. You know, you're going to have to start using negative numbers in order for your earlier scores to make sense, I think.
Wow. Okay. Well, looking forward to that. Anyway, yeah. You're here today because you are as familiar with Eclipse of the Darkness of Within as I am, because we are both old comic readers who bought everything at the time. So
that's true. I was working at a comic book shop when this came out.
Oh, well, la-di-da. Yeah, I was going into a comic shop at the time when this came out. Anyway.
Two peas in a pod.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that we should probably mention here is... Were there any events after this one? Well, Lonely Place of Dying was still sort of going on, but yeah, not really. This was, the next event after Armageddon and sort of War of the Gods, because they sort of overlapped a bit. So 1992, we finally got this one, and it was written by Keith Giffen with Robert Lauren Fleming doing a lot of the chapters. It was penciled by Bart Sears, who made everyone look like a condom stuffed with walnuts, and... It was inked by Randy Elliott, Mark Pennington, and Raymond Crissing, and coloured by Tom J. McCraw, lettered by Gaspar Saladino, and edited by Michael Urey, who's a bit of a mate of yours sometimes, isn't he?
Yeah, we've talked with him a few times as far as touching base about who's who. Absolutely true.
Yeah, well, maybe you could raise Eclipso with him next time. That'd be good.
That could be fun. I don't know that Rob would be that interested, but I certainly have a fascination for him.
Oh, poor Rob. To be so empty of life at this stage.
Well, he's stuck with me. I think that's pretty much broken him down over the years.
Anyway.
Much like Mike, who doesn't bother to show up for these anymore because you've just whittled him down to nothing. Way to go, well, pal.
If you're here, he's not. That's just one of his rules. So anyway.
It's in the agreement.
Anyway, what are we looking at here? It's it was two issues that sort of topped and tailed the series, and it was another one that picked all the annuals. So we had two 56-page comics, and in between were 18 annuals. So and that was 3 months' worth of comics in 1992. So, Shag, what's this one about?
Well, let's see. First of all, you got to mention, add all that up. That's over 1,000 pages of comics, folks. And Paul and I reread all of it in preparation for this. So breaking my own arm, giving myself a pat on the back here. But okay. So Eclipso, in a nutshell, was you remember Eclipso? He's that goofy looking bad guy from like a B-lister from the 1960s, right? Well, turns out that he's a complete badass because he's actually a vengeance demon who has just been pretending to be a joke. And Eclipso has spread his black diamonds all over the earth, 1,000 of these things. And whenever someone who has a black diamond in their possession gets angry, Eclipso can instantly take control of that particular person. Now, Eclipso's plan is to take control of all the superheroes on Earth and then devastate our planet during the full eclipse. The story climaxes with a massive confrontation at Eclipso's hideout on the moon. And thankfully, because you can tell because we're all still here, the heroes save the day.
And the other thing that the diamonds can do, they can be used to fire lasers if you hold them up to your eye, and sometimes they can like manifest a sort of ectoplasmic vengeance monster as well. So, yeah,
yep,
a couple of
extra. Absolutely.
Extras. Yeah. So, what are the big deals in this, Shag? I mean, from your point of view, what was the most significant things about this event that differentiated itself from all the others? Was it the plastic diamond on the first issue?
You got to mention that right out of the gate. I mean, when you're talking events in the 1990s and you're talking gimmicks, this was a massive one. Yes, it was like a one-inch high diamond by maybe half-inch wide, glued to the cover of every single direct market version of issue number one, which was at the time like insanely cool. It's like, oh, that's a great cover treatment. Little did we know that years later we'd all be complaining because it makes our long boxes all wibble wobble because the right hand side there is just pushing everything forward, and heaven forbid the comic in front of it. Yeah, you can forget the value of that one, folks, because it's just compressed and squished and got a diamond shape in the back of it.
But that's only a problem with tightly packing, isn't it? Surely. I mean, I've never had a problem with mine.
When you have 49 long boxes, you jam as many of those in there as you can. So, now, I think they missed an opportunity here to actually give away little plastic diamonds. In fact, I was sure they did. I had to reach out to people before this going, didn't DC give away little plastic diamonds to everyone? No, apparently they didn't. So I must have bought a copy and ripped an extra one off or something, because I remember holding one of these plastic diamonds. I don't know.
Oh, wow.
So other big deals, I felt like the reinvention of Eclipso was pretty cool. I mean, they turned him into this giant vengeance demon. That idea was neat. The Bart Sears art was really cool. I mean, the redesigned look for Eclipso with where he looks like, I don't know, a D&D character rather than a goofy cartoon character. I think he looks great. The Bart Sears design is fantastic. I thought Bart Sears did a really nice job in the margins where, in the main two bookend ones, he kept like, drawing Eclipso in the margins of the book, like staring at the reader. So I thought it was really clever usage in panel design.
It's a bit like Sergio Aragone sort of stuff at the same time.
Except menacing, yes.
Yeah, menacing, yeah.
And then the other big deal, I think, was the crossovers. Because, you know, again, we talked 1,000 pages in here. Some of them are hits, some of them are not. You know, for me, some of the good ones were the Superman annuals were very good, especially Adventures of Superman, which led right into Eclipse number 2. That one was exceptional. That was a really good one. I feel like Detective Comics was a good one. The Demon was, it was just fun. It didn't really have a major point, but it was a fun one with nice art. The Flash one for the Rogues. Robin, I thought, was fun with Anarchy. And then I think the Deathstroke one was good. It was kind of a good mercenary, almost like a good Punisher story. Well, there was other ones that were enjoyable as well, but those jumped out at me.
Yeah, I mean, I guess my problem with Deathstroke at the time was he was just a bit of an ass. So,
yeah, and Eclipse, and you were cheering for Eclipso?
Well, anyway, yeah. So there was really two things happening. Where in some annuals, one of the heroes would become eclipsed and then be sidelined so they could come back later in the story, you know, as the event unfolded. Or the other thing was that you had some more main plot development, and all the main plot development seemed to be taking place in the Superman annual. So, yeah. So they all had
for that, right?
Well, they were all written by Robert Lauren Fleming, weren't they? Or
two of them were. The first one and the last one, Man of Steel and Adventures of Superman, were written by Robert Lauren Fleming. That's why you got the extra development. For example, you mentioned the Vengeance stuff. You know, one of the things that didn't get introduced in the Eclipso comic but got introduced in the crossover, which I thought was weird, was that when someone became eclipsed, they had to expend their rage. That was not in the main Eclipso series, only in the Superman comics. And it made it an interesting situation where you would actually have Eclipsos fighting other Eclipsos because they were pissed off at them. So they had to expend that rage at them. So that was interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like Republicans and Democrats.
nice reference for my country. Very well.
Yeah. Yes. So, I mean, I really felt like the Superman chapters were extra parts of the story. So you could do Eclipso part 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. And then that would be all the Superman annuals and the first part and the last part. Whereas everything else, they just seem to have, you know, one effect that passed on. So like a character, you know, got eclipsed. But Starman had just had his book cancelled when this event happened, yet he got pretty prominent role in this one, didn't he?
Yes, he did. He was used quite a bit in it, which there was some cleverness to it in that he was mind-controlled by Eclipso, but since he could change his face, he would change his face so the eclipsed portion would go away, so the heroes didn't know. Basically, they, you know, put him in there to betray the heroes, and they didn't know he was eclipsed.
This is the Will Payton Starman, we should say. The one with the big star on his outfit and sort of the disco aerobic outfit or whatever it is.
It was an obvious setup. Like, I remember actually when this came out, when the last issue came out, I couldn't get to the comic shop that day, and my friends read it when they got Eclipso number 2. I'm like, don't spoil it for me. Don't tell me that Will Payton died stopping Eclipso. I actually said that to people, and they're like, oh, you did read it. I'm like, what? I was just kidding.
Oh, no.
I was just kidding with them at that point. So I was shocked to find out that, yes, that is in fact how Will Payton died. But if you look at the setups there, Eclipso's in the last four issues of Starman, then they cancel the series. He's being controlled throughout the story. He's made of solar power, so it makes sense that he would die to save the day. So it stretched on a bit too long because there were so many annuals and they used him in so many of them. If they'd only used him in a few, I think it would have been quite as drawn out. But yeah, Starman had quite a big role in this, and he did die to save everyone, which was nice of him. That was very friendly of him.
Kind. He got better later, though.
Yeah, kind of, sort of. Maybe. It depends on how you look at it.
He was never the same, though. And I remember feeling the loss because, you know, the Starman book was one that I very much enjoyed at the time. You know, I really liked the dynamic of him and his sister and, you know, Kitty Faulkner from Star Labs.
Oh, yeah. I love that book. It brought me back to superhero comics. I was deep in the world of this book. You probably haven't heard of it. It's called Doom Patrol. It was deep in the world of proto-Vertigo stuff like Doom Patrol and Sandman. And, you know, I was reading everything that was dark and adult, and I wasn't doing kiddie comics anymore. And then I read Starman, and I was like, wow, this is fun. And it brought me back to superhero comics. So Will Payton will always have a soft spot in my heart. I love that character. Mm-hmm. Now, a couple other things. These are not major points. These are just some fun things. I think it is freaking hysterical that Wonder Woman's on her briefs. You know, Wonder Woman's famous for having her Star Spangled briefs, right? As boys, we spend a lot of time studying them. Anyway, all of those stars turned into crescent moons when she got eclipsed. which cracks me up. That is so funny that, like, you know, at first I thought it was just one artist doing it. I'm like, bah, ha, ha. And then I noticed even Bartiers, everybody's doing it. That is hysterical. Then there was also the major storyline of Superman being eclipsed and all the heroes teaming up to stop him. Again, that culminated in that Fantastic Adventures of Superman annual drawn by Bob McLeod. That was a really nice point that they carried through several of those annuals. I like that. And then, of course, it's very important to mention two major characters were in this storyline, Captain Boomerang and Lex Luthor II, you know, the premier heroes of Australia. So
yep.
I'm sure that would, you know, really make, you know, give you the warm and fuzzies.
Yeah, it was good to see some really solid Aussie representation back then. Yeah. So, I mean, what came from this? There was a Valor series, which Mon-El spends the entire series standing basically still in Eclipso's moon base. Until he finally gets unleashed in the last part. And there was an Eclipso series. And when I came back to this series, I remember thinking Eclipso was so, you know, vicious and such a badass in this. And then I realized, no, that's actually in the series that follows this. One, he's a supervillain. You know, he's a rehabilitated supervillain, you know, maxed up the power levels a bit. But I remember thinking, oh, he was so vicious and nasty in this. And no, that's the series that follows this one, not this. Like, he's... Yeah, he's vicious and murderous and, you know, sadistic.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sorry, you go.
No, I keep talking on top of you. I apologize. It's the time difference between Australia. It's like, you know, I got to wait 12 hours for every single response from Paul so before I can respond back. And when the timing doesn't always work out. Like you, though, I remembered the cool redesign of Eclipso. You know, how fantastic he looks with the, you know, the stitched clothing and the trench coat and all the cool, you know, cool, evil-looking stuff. And I didn't realize that's only until, like, in two panels of this whole crossover. Year again, it's mainly in the ongoing series. Yeah, same sort of problem for me.
Mm. So, was there any... Have anyone else ever talked about this one, or are we the first?
We're the first. No one has ever talked about this. No, I'm just kidding. Now, last year, there was a crossover event amongst podcasts and blogs called Best Event Ever in June 2017. They also, you can still find these out there. The hashtag they used was also EclipsoTDW25. Like EclipsoTDW25, celebrating the 25th anniversary of this story. And you could find it on folks like Relatively Geeky Podcast Network, Coffee and Comics Podcast, Resurrections, which is an Adam Warlock and Thanos podcast, The Retroist, Chris on Infinite Earths, Cosmic Treadmill, For the Non-Discerning Reader, The Pop Culture Palace, our buddy Frank, Diablo Frank, was involved. He did the Diana Prince Wonder Woman podcast in DC Bloodlines, and also there was an appearance in I Am the Gun. So yeah, they did a really nice crossover last year where they spent a lot of time celebrating this crossover. And also attacking.
Going into
some of the bad stuff.
A lot more detail than we're giving it here, but I mean, this is the nature of this one. I mean, we're not the podcast where we go into everything. We're the one where we skip over it and then give it a harsh score at the end.
Maybe not so harsh. And
well, shall we get into the scoring then, Shag?
Let's do it.
Okay, so the first thing is eventiness. Eventiness, how eventness is this? It's not really a word, but, you know, it's what we use. My score for events, and I must admit, when I reread this, it wasn't as epic as I remembered. Like, I think I had the nostalgia goggles on and thought, wow, this was great. But it does have a lot of characters in it. It has a Phantom Lady in it, which immediately gives it at least 1 point. And, you know, there's a lot of people represented, you know, some good, solid diversity in the DC universe of the time. There was one character popped up at one point. I was going, who's that? And then I remembered it was one of the recruits from Legion at the time, the blue girl. But I'm going to give it a 7 for eventiness. A 7.
It's interesting. Because we came to it from different reasons, we end up with the same score. I'll spoil it for you there. I came at it more positively than you, and yet gave it the same score. Because I think you guys scoring, obviously, like I said, Crisis should have been a 10, so you're all over the map here. Anyway, it's definitely an occupier, first of all, we should say. You know, it's none of the other categories. It's definitely an occupier. If this never happened, DC Universe would be perfectly fine and keep going. But the thing that impressed me about this was the annuals were all in. You know, there were no Red Skies crossovers here. I mean, when they did it, every annual was knee-deep in this thing. They had a major player from their book turn into an Eclipso, or at least had a major impact. You know, the bookend issues with the featuring the plastic diamond of number one alone makes it a big eventy thing as far as I'm concerned. And also, there's a wide variety of annuals, not just a couple characters. You know, you talked about there's 18 different annuals. But if you start taking out the duplicates, like going, okay, multiple Supermans, multiple Batmans, you know, Titans and Deathstroke, Justice League, things like that, you still get about 12 different, you know, lines of DC heroes that are involved. I think that provides a pretty good breadth. So I also scored it a 7. But I felt like it was a pretty good, as far as event-style book.
What about the writing, Shaq?
Well, the writing, all right, it's decent. It's not fantastic. In fact, I think the story is made better by some of the crossovers. You know, when you, because if you just read the first, because at first I read just the two bookends, and I was like, okay, it's okay. Then I went back and reread stuff, especially like the Robert Lauren Fleming stuff. So to me, that brought up the rating quite a bit as an event, and so ultimately I landed on it's like a high 6. I feel like.
Yeah, a 6. This is very disturbing because I have the same score as you, and I've never thought of me as someone who thinks the same as you. So,
are my brother from another brother from another dingo. How's that?
Another continent. Yeah, I give it a 6 too. I think, I don't know. It's the sort of story. If it was written today, they would really up the threat level, and. I mean, things like Starman being a traitor, that could be a really big reveal at some point, but it's right up front. He said, you know, basically, you know, Eclipso takes him over and then he goes, oh, I can turn back into regular Starman and fool everyone. And then, you know, he just runs around, you know, manipulating people. But that could be a huge twist, and things like that could have, you know, really made this a bit more intense. Because, you know, there are moments of intensity, but there's not sustained intensity throughout this crossover, I thought.
Yeah. It almost might have even worked better if you just bought the two Eclipso books and the annuals for the series you were reading. You know, like instead of reading all 18, maybe it's not designed that way. Maybe you're supposed to, if you're just reading the Superman ones, that would work better. Because you're right, there's repetition after repetition after repetition with certain plot threads. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, but like the Batman one gets completely mental. You know, there's a bit where the. Where Batman and Joker are both eclipsed and they're chucking cars at each other and things like that.
Crazy.
Yeah. All right, now on to art. It's a mixed bag, I think. I mean, there's within the annuals themselves, there's, you know, there's artists who maybe in a few, you know, a year or two could be up and coming, but for now they're just practicing. But there's some really good covers on these books. So there's some guy called Joe Quesada who was really talented and did some really good stuff in the early 90s and just disappeared without a trace. Yeah, I don't know what happened to him, but he was really good on some of the covers. And Bart's covers are great for the opening and closing chapter. What covers stood out for you, Jack?
Anything by Quesada. Also, the Sam Keith covers were really, really nice.
Oh, yeah.
Those were great. He did the Batman and the Detective covers. He may have done one or two more. I don't remember off the top of my head. I have a whole list. You know, tell you what, before we give our scores, and then why don't I do this? I'll give sort of my argument here. I feel like you're guiding us a direction, which I feel like you're doing a horrible disservice to the series. Because if you put it in the standards of 1992, all right, don't think of it from 2018. Think of it from 1992 standards. Here's the names. You ready? Bart Sears, Phil Jimenez, Travis Cherris, Dave freaking Cockrum, Tom Lyle, Bob McLeod, Mike McCone, and Joe Phillips. And then, as we said, Sam Keith and Joe Quesada. That is a fantastic group of talented artists. So I think from 1992 standards, this art is really, really good. You even get Chris Wozniak in there, which some people like, some people don't, but he's a favorite of my buddy Mike Michelle Fife, so I got to mention him. So yeah, amazingly talented artist. Yes, there's some annuals that really the art wasn't fantastic, but the highs are so high, I think you got to go that route.
Yeah.
So what's your
score? Right. I'm going to give it 28.
28. Perfect. No. Excellent. That's what I thought.
No, all right, you've talked me up one. I'm going 7. I was going to go 6. I'm going 7 now.
Okay. All right. Well, we're close. I gave it an 8. So, and a lot of that's pushed by Bart Sears, the amazing talent of Bart Sears at this point. He was at the height of his powers. And, you know, the redesign alone for Eclipso in art-wise is fantastic.
Yeah. Oh, good. Do you want to do Impact and Legacy first?
Absolutely. Impact and Legacy. Okay, so we talked about Eclipso. We talked about Valor. A little more detail on that. You know, the Eclipso reinvention here made him a major bad guy. It really did. He was never a minor baddie again. He had the ongoing series, went 18 issues. One of the big things that came out of that was, as you mentioned, he was just a vicious, vicious creature. He slaughtered a ton of C-list characters in an issue of Eclipso. A bunch of them. And that had an impact on the DC Universe for years because they kept introducing new versions of these characters. And they always had to refer back to, was it Isle del Muerto or something like that, wherever he murdered all his characters. The Valor series went for 23 issues. That's pretty respectable. And it was pretty important to the post-Crisis Legion, really, all the different things he did there. And I was going to leave it at that, and then I thought of something. I go, wait a minute. Will Payton died in this. That really cleared the decks for James Robinson's Starman. Without Will Payton's death here, they really probably couldn't have done that. So I was gonna give it a 4 for Legacy. Because, I mean, even though I mentioned those things there, they're not really that big a deal. You go forward 4 years, and Eclipso doesn't have that much of an impact on the DC Universe. So I was going to give it a 4. But then I remembered the Starman thing with James Robinson. So it pushes it up to a 5 for me.
Yeah, okay. Well, a 5. All right, I'm going to write that down for scoring.
Writing down all my numbers. I'm just suggesting.
I changed them just to suit me. I'm going to give it a 7 for Impact and Legacy because I don't think Eclipso was ever the same after this, and Eclipso has popped up again and again in the DC Universe, and he went up the power rankings at this point. I mean, I could easily see a DC Universe movie with Eclipso as the villain, you know? I mean, he can be on a sort of dark side level, and, you know, he brings... Darkseid seems to have a detached, I'm above it all, whereas Eclipso, you know, wants to rip everyone's intestines out.
And he rebels that in the challenge, yeah.
Yeah, you could really use that in a movie. And, you know, he's popped up in the animated, and he's popped up in, you know, the Justice League before New 52 started. And, well, we all know what happened after Identity Crisis with Jean Laurent and things. So,
he would be interesting for the movies, you know, because DC has never really done anything where their characters get, you know, in this case, they'd be taken over so they could fight each other. The DC movies haven't done anything like that. And also, this would give them a chance to go really, really dark with the characters, something else DC hasn't done with the movies. So, yeah, I think that'd be a good idea.
Hmm. Yeah, so that's why. That's 7.
All right. Very generous.
But as always, we have a third person chime in with their contribution, and this time it's Tim Price. And he wrote us a lovely email, which I will go through. And he said, "Hello, Paul and Dr. Hamburglar. Thank you for letting me sit in on your DC OCD session featuring Eclipso, The Darkness Within. Of the DC events out there, this one definitely needs some therapy. I'm very undecided about it." He said, "Eventiness. As the second annual based DC event and being an occupier, it gets high marks. More annuals participated than in Armageddon 2001. More characters were involved, including ones that didn't have a monthly title, like The Creeper, Captain Marvel, Shazam, and the recently cancelled Starman. And the heroes had plenty of fighting. The hordes of Eclipsos, or Eclipses, as he suggests, either as powered-up villains, monsters, and sometimes allies. The event did its job in giving the writers and artists a simple framework to do different kinds of stories. So I'm giving it a 9. This boy's crazy.
Wow.
Whoa. All right. The writing. The bookend specials were okay, but somewhat disappointing. Robert, Lauren Fleming, and Keith Gibbon had written all the Ambush Bug miniseries, which were great fun and joy to reread, but with Eclipso, it feels like they were trying too hard to make it serious. For example, the Creeper's characterization was fine, but not as wacky as the JLI, or insane as his secret origin. And that was true for some of the other heroes. They all basically came across the same, very little difference in personality, making them almost as homogenized as the Eclipsed characters. And that's a problem in the annuals too. Since Eclipso takes over a person, they all end up written the same. This got tiresome very quickly. Someone gets a black diamond, gets angry, Eclipso smashed, then trick hero into becoming Eclipsed. This could have been a chance to learn more about the characters and what truly angers them, but instead it was generic injustice and in-the-moment rage. Missed opportunities all round. But the biggest fault, We're supposed to buy that 1,000 black diamonds have been around for a century, eclipsing people, and no one's noticed. Worse, they all just happen to be showing up in the span of a few weeks, and the retconning of Eclipso origin is so hard to swallow. The Lords of Chaos really didn't know about Eclipso in the Phantom Stranger miniseries. He was pretending all along to have lame weaknesses. And then he still had lame limitations. One squirt of Vaseline and he drops his pointy weapon. I guess that's why he couldn't wear sunblock to combat the weakness to sunlight. I'm usually not this negative, but really there's so many problems, I'm afraid writing gets a 3. A 3, wow, he's harsh there. Wow. Makes up for his 9. Covers and artwork, not surprisingly, since this event was shown in the year's annuals, the artwork was uneven. Almost none of the artists from the regular series drew the annuals. It was a tryout ground for some new artists, and it showed. And there were some stars, but plenty of mediocrity, and far too many hints of extreme 90s. However, I do like Bart Sears, so the bookend specials were more enjoyable. His dynamic fluid style works well for the shape-changing aspects of Eclipso's powers. The Moon Palace is quite striking, and since anger is important to the story, Bart's a great choice for his fierce faces. But just when I start to enjoy the art, there's a bizarre couple of pages drawn by Giffen in special number 2. Typically, I like Giffen's. Well, but this was his trencher phase, and it's terribly jarring here. And while I want to give the highest score for Sears' work, the artwork overall gets a 6. 6.
Step carefully, Tim Price. You know, I might have to take my vengeance on you in the JLI show, because Tim's a frequent commenter over there. I'm just warning you now, Tim.
Right. Legacy and Impact. Here's where this event has real problems. They killed Will Payton Starman. I love Starman, and he didn't die that great. It just felt like his comic didn't sell so well, so let's get rid of him. I mean, I understand that death in comics is more exiling to comic book limbo because they can always bring them back. So that means a death must either be important in future stories, like Barry Allen's being a driving force for Wally West's Flash, or genuinely affecting the readers, like Kara Zor-El. But this just made me mad, and no other characters really cared. That hurts. Yes, Eclipso's got an ongoing series, but it continued that trend, killing off characters DC wanted to get rid of and exacerbating the retcon problems. Like the opposite of a fixer, this event created more problems while appearing to clean house. I did Eclipso's series, and it's just meh. Valor got a series as well, which was pretty good, but that was almost more set up by Legion 5 years later, which was laying plenty of groundwork to establish Valor as Superboy's replacement in Legion history. So Eclipso, the Darkness Queen, wasn't required to launch Valor. DC could have started anyway. However, in the longer view, this version of Eclipso has returned again and again, sometimes done well, JSA, and sometimes cough, Johnny Loring, cough, not as great. So while I don't favour this status, I can't deny that this has made Eclipso a more dangerous threat in the DC Universe, and somewhat grudgingly, I give it a 6.
That's so respectable.
Yeah. So, anyway, that's Tim's contribution to this. I guess it's time for maths.
He's taking his shoes off, folks. I will say, Tim made a good point about killing a character just for the sake of doing it, and then not having a lot of, like, no one really that upset. Yeah, that did become a trend, and I was upset they killed Will Payton at first. Now I'm okay with it, even though I love the character because of Robinson stuff. But yeah, that became a very big, you know, predictable trend with DC. It was like, it's a big crossover, someone has to die, kind of thing.
Yeah, I must admit, with the killing of Will Payton, the thing I really wanted was a funeral. Like, you know, I felt there was just, you know, some leftover baggage from the series that needed to be played out at a funeral for his sister, you know, and the people who meant something to him, like Kitty Faulkner and Phantom Lady and things like that. So I remember being very ticked off at the time that I wanted that. You know, I wanted him to get a heroic send off the way, you know, he deserved.
I felt so strongly about Will Payton's sister. I wrote a letter in to the James Robinson Starman series, and I was a bit of a letter hack back then. I used to get published off and on here in DC Comics, and I wrote to James Robinson Starman saying, hey, I really wish you guys would do something with, I think it was Jeannie was her name, you know, Will Payton's sister. She was a major character. She deserves some sort of recognition as being part of the Starman legacy. Surprisingly, they never published my letter because I think I was a little close to home.
Yeah, she was in the Starman series as a character called Sadie for quite some time.
Spoilers!
Oh, we don't care about spoilers much on this show. Yeah. All right, I've done the maths. I dragged Rift over here and used his fingers as well. And we are looking at a total. So we've got 26 from you. 27 from me, which is surprising that I'm above you. And we got...
You're always 20, above me, Paul.
24 from Tim, but we halve that because he's semi-OCD, and we get 12. And if I add those together by the power of Grayskull, I get 65. So...
That's respectable.
I think we beat Armageddon by 1 point.
That was my intention. Believe me, as I developed my score, I made sure that we would come out that way.
Awesome. Wow. Okay. So any final thoughts, Jack, on this?
No, I really enjoyed it when I was working at the comic book shop. I was very excited, a lot of hype. You know, it was a lot of fun doing it during that summer. It got people talking about where it was going to go, and it was fun reliving it. You know, again, reread 1,000 pages for you for a 20-minute conversation. Oh my gosh! But it was a lot of fun, and I think this series is worth celebrating. So I look forward to hearing more episodes and you going back and adjusting your scores for Crisis and Legion, Legends.
Right. Okay. So, where can people find you if they, God forbid, want to find you?
I hang out over at the Fire and Water Podcast Network. It's a network my buddy and I, my hetero life mate, Rob Kelly, and I founded based on, it's a little shocking, but Aquaman and Firestorm was the foundation of it. But since then, it's grown to be so much more. We have shows talking about Who's Who, the definitive guide of DC Universe. We do podcasts on the Digest, like the old DC Digest. We do stuff on Justice League International, the Blahaha era. I do a series on that. We have one, and I'm not on all the shows, but we also have shows on Justice League Unlimited, the cartoon. We've got Bob Dylan shows. We've got shows covering MASH. We do Secret Origins. We got a Batman show. You name it. We got Plastic Man, Team Ups, Marvel Universe. Lots of different stuff out there. Lots of different shows. Now, always something almost every day. And it's fantastic. A group of people I'm working with. Couldn't be happier working with these folks. So the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
Well, it's hard to imagine anyone who listens to our show who doesn't already know about your network. But if you don't, it's very well worth checking out. And I think Shag has been a tremendous booster of the podcasting economy for comics. You know, always looking to promote other people's shows and recognize, like when we started Waiting for Doom, it didn't take you guys long to start mentioning us every time the Doom Patrol got mentioned and, adopting names like Hot Hands and things like that. Helping popularize that sort of folly that we perpetuate.
Well, one thing I do love is building communities of friends and fandoms and things like that. And I really do feel like our little corner of the podcasting universe, I feel like we've built a big family. And I think it's wonderful. I mean, a lot of us have met now. I mean, you're going to Heroes Con this year. You're going to be more of the folks from the family. I think it's fantastic. I think it's lovely that we've built such a great community.
Well, I mean, yeah, thank you very much. And, you know, it's terrific that you guys are sort of in the heart of it all. And even a grumpy puss like Rob. So.
I think that's how we should go out.
I don't want to go out with you, Shag. Sorry.
Oh, break my heart.
Do you want to stick around for this feedback? We'll play your promo and then come back for feedback, eh?
Sure.
Justice League International, Bwahaha Podcast, a new monthly show chronicling the adventures of the JLI era by Keith Giffen and J.M. DeMatteis. We'll be going issue by issue in release order, tackling the core Justice League title, Justice League Europe, and the quarterly book. Along the way, we'll take time out for special episodes covering various spin-offs, cartoon appearances, the infamous TV pilot, and much more. So join me in an ever-changing roster of guest hosts as we celebrate your favorite JLI members, such as...
Martian Manhunter,
Batman,
Dr. Fate,
Black Canary,
Fire,
Ice,
Maxwell Lord,
Oberon,
Captain Marvel,
Rocket Red,
Captain Atom,
Mr. Miracle,
Guy Gardner,
Booster Gold,
Blue Beetle,
Nort,
and many, many more. Justice League International, Bwahaha Podcast, part of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. Want to make something of it?
Okay, so we got an email from Jimmy McGlinchey from Ireland, and Jimmy's become a huge fan of our show. He's written on many episodes, but I got sad because he hadn't commented on Invasion, and but then we got this email where he did. So sorry for the delay in commenting on previous episodes. Work got in the way, unfortunately. Well, maybe you could be unemployed and comment more. Invasion. It was a very good series, and as mentioned in the podcast, was pretty much self-contained. You did not have to read any of the tie-ins to get the full gist of the story, and indeed the main series did a lot to summarise what one may have missed if they did not read the tie-ins, which for the most part were very good. The story itself was well done, bringing everyone in the DCU into the role. The last year of the miniseries was a bit rushed, and a lot of the tie-in stories between issue 2 and 3, labelled Invasion Aftermath, were pretty much filler and added little to the main story. On the whole, though, I enjoyed this series, as did I. Yeah,
I think Invasion was very good.
I'm surprised it scored so low, but that's, you know, Mike sabotaged it. Anyway.
That's true. I agree.
Yeah, and then he follows on with comments about Armageddon 2001. I think Paul was a little harsh on the series, and I won't read the rest of what he's saying if he's going to diss me. The whole Captain Adam Hawk switch was a bit messy, and I supposed if you were reading both Captain Adam and Hawk, Captain Adam and Hawk and Dove before, the clues were all there leading to Captain Adam. They bloody well were. This was early enough into my delving into the DCU, though, that I had no knowledge of what was going on in those stories, so the reveal was not as jarring to me. It was interesting that they could not let go of Captain Adam as Monarch, as they resurrected that in Extreme Justice and then a decade later in the miniseries Battle for Bloodhaven. I thought I was the only person who had read Battle for Bloodhaven.
Sadly, one more right here, buddy.
Oh, that's why we get therapy, really.
Really? Now, real quick, Jimmy from the Irish Embassy is absolutely correct. You were far too harsh on Armageddon 2001, but Clinton was all over the board, and Aaron's comments were as well. So I think actually between your far too low scores and Aaron and Clinton's far too high scores, I think you actually got to about the right score, which worked out for everybody. But yeah, you were too mean there, dude. You were just vicious.
Well, that's the beauty of this. I mean, our scoring, it's not individually based. It's a sort of it's a gestalt score. So it's hard to control.
Scientifically accurate.
Yeah, I mean, at least this way I can blame other people when people criticize our scoring. Anyway, which no one ever does.
Stay tuned for our DC CDO podcast.
Yes. He also went on, the Superman, Batman, and Justice League Armageddon 2001 annuals had some great Elseworld-type stories, and I must admit, in the Batman annual, when Alan Grant parodied the scene from The Killing Joke, it was very funny. Now, War of the Gods. This was a mini-series I did not pick up at the time. Well done. I did read some of the tie-ins. Hawkworld was very good, as I recall, and the Justice League Europe 31 had to be some kind of record, as it was a War of the Gods tie-in, dealt with the aftermath of Armageddon 2001, and was in the middle of the JLE event breakdowns, which you'll probably cover on your show one day.
Yes, three
events in one, and probably the best line with Metamorpho commenting about the Thor they battled. Funny, for some reason I always figured Thor would be blonde. I did manage to read through the miniseries subsequently, but have to agree with the comments made in the podcast. The writing was much too wordy and complicated, and probably only deserved to be ahead of Millennium because of the cover art. Love your series, and look forward to the Eclipso coverage next time out. Well, you know that's fairly disappointing now, having heard most of it. Sorry. But thanks, Jimmy. And that was it for comments. I don't think there were any more comments.
No, there actually was not all for comments. Seriously? Okay, I will read it for you, since apparently you can't do your job. These would be comments that came from your Facebook post that was labeled simply God Biff, promoting War of the Gods. Some incredibly sexy man named Shag Matthews wrote, "Great new episode. Man, I had such high hopes for that series," again, speaking of War of the Gods, "before it came out. Such a letdown. Really expected some epic moments with Wonder Woman and Captain Marvel. Sad face emoji." Absolutely true. That guy's brilliant, this guy. Very insightful. And then he goes, "And regarding the Suicide Squad issue with the writer," now if you guys remember, Paul went on and on about how he thought this was super clever and funny. So this mysterious Shag Matthews person wrote, "Regarding the Suicide Squad issue with the writer, I recall some annoying fanboy wrote a snarky letter about that character that was published in Suicide Squad number 62. Such an entitled loser." So I think that's worth looking up. Go find your Suicide Squad number 2. Look for a letter by, I don't know, some anonymous person who I won't name, and where he complains about them using the writer.
You act like you're the only person who ever had letters published.
You know, someone should do a podcast about that.
Yeah, well, I had letters in Valor and Eclipso after Eclipso: The Darkness Within. So.
Well, when I eventually meet you, I will go pick up some copies of Valor out of the 25-cent bin and get you to sign your letter. And I will equally pick up some Dr. Fate issues and out of the quarter bin and let you. I will sign them for you. How's that? We'll exchange them when we finally meet.
But seriously, I love looking through old comics because, you know, occasionally you see letters from people you know now who are still active. And, you know, a lot of the times you're wondering, where are these people who were so active back then? You know, have they all died or lost interest? What's happened?
I assume they're all dead. That's good. Yeah. Literally, when I read them, I'm like, yeah, that guy's probably dead. Yeah, that guy probably lived in his mom's basement. He's probably dead. Yeah, that guy, very unhealthy, probably ate a lot of potato chips. He probably died. Yeah, that's kind of what I think every time I read a letters page.
All right. Anyway, I think we better wrap it up. I've talked to you way too long for my comfort. If anyone wants to get in touch with us, God forbid, you can send us an email at dcocdcast@gmail.com. You can also do it on Twitter at dcocdcast. Hard to say. And next time we're coming back. Well, it's a Waiting for Doom next week. It's John Byrne, sorry. After that, we're going to do The Death of Superman, which was something that was an event.
A little important.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks, Shag.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. This has been fantastic. I appreciate it. Thank you, Paul. And, I really appreciate the chance to talk to Mike for 15 seconds. That was really great. I've been waiting all these years for that. Thank you.
No worries. I'm glad. I hope it lived up to your dreams.
Or nightmares.
All right, we'll catch you next time on DC OCD.